So Josh is joining me today because Josh has been doing a lot of stuff. We're gonna talk about all kinds of stuff. We're gonna talk a bit about open source, TypeScript, TypeScript ESLint, and Josh also has a book that came out. I can't remember when it came out, Josh, but it's Learning TypeScript. I'm gonna drop a link to it. You should be able to see it there in the chat. Yeah, when did the book come out? I can't remember.
I forget. I want to say end of July, middle of July.
We'll get to the book in a bit, but I kind of wanted to touch on TypeScript to begin with. And I know you've been doing TypeScript for a while. Myself, I got exposed to, it makes it sound like I got a disease. Sorry. The first time I started messing around with TypeScript was, I think, fall 2015. I used to work in the .NET ecosystem, so I was at a Microsoft shop, and the CEO at the time was like, "We're going to use TypeScript for this new, we were working on an e-commerce starter site." I got exposed to it early, and I found my ramp up to TypeScript wasn't too bad because I came from C Sharp. And for folks that might be new to TypeScript, TypeScript's created by the same language creator as C Sharp, Anders Hallsberg. So there's a lot of inspiration in TypeScript from C Sharp. But I was kind of curious to hear about like your beginnings with TypeScript, kind of, what you've been doing with it, and that'll kind of tie us into maybe TypeScript ESLint in a bit too.
I had a similar exposure, actually. I was also in a .NET shop in that I was at Microsoft interning summer 2014 and then started 2015. So I was also doing full stack .NET and I just liked it. It was better. I don't remember. I think there were like a bunch of people yelling at me to try it out because it had already been open sourced for 2, 3 years at that time. But it's just a better way of organizing and structuring your JavaScript code. Like at the time, I think it's fascinating. At the time, TypeScript for the first few years was being advertised as better organized, structured JavaScript. Now that JavaScript has advanced a lot and has a lot more features, the emphasis has shifted to just be JavaScript with better type checking, which is different. They've stopped advertising classes because people now realize that that's not the best thing to use all the time.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I think they still have some in the handbook, like if you go to the examples, but yeah, I agree. 'Cause like coming the way I saw it initially, like one thing that was great about it when like I was working on that starter site was we had a bunch of back end devs who were able to actually, they didn't know front end, but they could actually write business logic and stuff in TypeScript, because it was very familiar. So, but you are right, it has moved. I really feel like it's definitely a type checker, but also like just, guides you. Like I always kind of crack up when people say they don't like TypeScript, but they're fans of VS Code, because I always hate to break it to them, but like, when you're doing that, rename that variable or move something, like that's all TypeScript under the hood. So that always makes me chuckle a bit, but that's where I've seen a lot of the power come from it, also the discoverability, because like, I mean, you did .NET as well, so you're familiar with Visual Studio Code, and like anybody else that's done any kind of type language with some editor, like maybe IntelliJ or something, stuff like IntelliSense and refactoring tools have been around for a long time. It's just, I think in the front end space, it was really search and replace for the longest time until something like this came along. So,
Yeah, we've infected everyone, as you said.
yeah, exactly. But it's also interesting, like you said, it has changed over the course of time. I mean, for the better, I think, but like there's a lot of things you couldn't do when TypeScript came out, 'cause like obviously it takes time to get to where they are today, but like for example, like the infer keyword didn't exist like in the beginning. Type like types it's as well. Like this kind of ties into open source, but like I think people kind of take the types for granted nowadays because they just expect them to be there. But in the early days, there's a project called Definitely Typed on GitHub, and I'm sure you've contributed to there. I haven't. I think I might have had one contribution. I can't remember. But it was pretty amazing to see the community just start saying like, "Hey, I don't have types for this. I'm gonna go create some." And that's like evolved over time, and it's still widely used. But I mean, a lot more projects that go to TypeScript now, you don't need to do that because obviously the types come with it. I still find it pretty amazing that project gained so much steam. It's obviously directly related to the popularity of TypeScript, but I'm still impressed because that's not even a, as far as I know, it wasn't a Microsoft initiative. I think it was just somebody from the community.
Actually, I couldn't remember the name of the post till now, but yeah, it was a great history of definitely types. That post that I'm going to post in the chat from John Riley. He's one of the folks who was involved in it. It's like one of the biggest, if not the biggest, repo in terms of activity on GitHub. It's got type definitions for every third-party typing, like all the packages that don't have their own TypeScript types. It's all there. Okay. It's huge. Like the amount of automation they have set up honestly inspires me. Like every pull request gets like automatically assigned reviewers and a bot that posts your status checks and lets you know if there's stuff you have to do. It's wonderful. Yeah. Really, really cool people.
Yeah, I'm just opening it up here in the so folks can see it on screen. They can definitely check it out. I've never seen this before, so I'm definitely going to give this a read. And like Josh said, he also dropped a link to John Riley's tweet there. But if you're not following John Riley and you're a fan of TypeScript or just dev in general, definitely give him a follow as well. But yeah, this project, like, it completely exploded and I don't know. I still find it pretty mind-boggling, honestly, that it gained so much traction. And this ties into some other open source initiatives. So people are familiar. I think a lot of the people in the chat are front-end devs, but most people are familiar with ESLint. And I can't remember when it came out, but there was a project that preceded TypeScript ESLint called TSLint. I'm going to try and load that up here. But okay, was it from Palantir? I can't remember who initiated, so I guess it's from Palantir. But this was kind of the way when you were working with a TypeScript project, like if you wanted linting. And I think this is a kind of good segue to talk about TypeScript ESLint, because there came a point, I can't remember when it was, 2018 or 2019, but it was just kind of like, there was people like yourself, his name's escaping me, Henry, what's his last name's Henry?
James Henry.
James Henry, thank you. Yeah, I don't know if he's at Narwhal anymore, but he was working on TSLint as well. And then it kind of hit. Yeah, okay, it says 2019. I should just read it right in front of me. So basically, yeah, in 2019, I think what happened was like ESLint was obviously widely adopted. And a bunch of you said, hey, it's probably a good idea if we just kind of let's use the existing project and see what we can do. Or do you kind of want to maybe speak to that a bit?
Sure. Yeah. That is one big aspect of why we switched. So yeah.
Okay.
Back in the day, there were two linters. There was ESLint and TSLint. ESLint for JavaScript, TSLint for TypeScript. That simplicity of description is really nice, but it meant that every time a feature would land or a community rule set, like the React rules of hooks were published for ESLint, we would then have to implement it in TSLint. I was active with the project, eventually became a maintainer. That's a pain in the butt. And at the time, TypeScript was even smaller of a subset of the JavaScript community than it is now. So TSLint just wasn't as good. It didn't have as many features, but it did have access to the TypeScript type checker, which is awesome. That makes for really powerful linter rules. Also, as you said, Palantir is the corporate sponsor of TSLint, which means a lot of people didn't want to use it because Palantir has a lot of politically not so great associations and things that they've done.
I
did not work for them, but I do remember getting directly called a fascist on GitHub issues once, so that was that was great.
That's interesting. So,
for the record, not a fascist, but eventually the TSLint folks prior to me, the people who actually knew what was going on, worked with TypeScript and ESLint folks and made this new tooling, TypeScript ESLint, which I, again, did not create, but I'm now a maintainer on, that lets you use ESLint with support for TypeScript rather than a whole separate other package. TypeScript ESLint.io.
Yeah, I was going to say this was so great when this happened. I remember it was a little rocky at the beginning because, you know, obviously it took a bit of time to get it working completely, but from what I remember at least, but once it was in ESLint, I was like, oh, this is so much better, because like you were saying, just having to maintain the two things. I had some stuff that was JavaScript as well in a project, but TSLint, you know, and like just extra stuff. So it was so nice when this got merged. Hat tip to you and everybody that's been contributing to this.
Thank you. I think there's a really interesting parallel with the ESM, the ECMAScript modules migration and change in Node and JavaScript as a whole, that there is a lot of pain in the ecosystem now from people needing to switch from Common JS to Node modules. And just as there was a lot of pain switching from TSLint to TypeScript ESLint. For example, TypeScript ESLint still has performance issues, as was mentioned in the chat. Thank you. That builds that need type information, like the full power of TypeScript, are slower, and we just are architecturally having a hard time. But getting everyone over to TS or over to ESLint from TSLint was necessary. We had to deprecate the thing. So we're in this transitory period now where a lot of people are still switching over. Fun fact, definitely typed is still using TSLint. I'm working
Oh,
with
okay,
them
I
to
didn't
try to
know that.
move over.
I'll
Yeah,
drop that
they
in the
got
chat
some
too.
custom rules that were just hard to migrate. But once everyone's over and once we fix those issues, it's so much better to be on the same tooling. Same
Yeah,
with
no, for
ESM. I'm
sure.
so excited for everyone to support it. It's going to be so good.
Yeah, I know that there's definitely a big push to support ESM. I know, like, I always say his name incorrectly, but Sindre Sorhus or Sorsha, I can't remember how his last name's spelled, but he's prolific maintainer and contributor to the ecosystem. And he wrote a blog post, I think it was last year, saying as of like new versions of anything he's doing, it's ESM only, you know, and this kind of driving, you know, it causes some pain points because, like you said, you run into we need some stuff to drive that because there's still, I mean, one thing that TypeScript does well is, you know, it has the compatibility to, so that you can have both still and not, you know, have less problems. But yeah, I definitely prefer, I mean, I don't know. I just seem to prefer like the import syntax versus the require anyways. I mean, it's just, I don't know, the aesthetic of it has kind of enamored me, which is not a good reason to say we should use it, but I'm just so used to, 'cause
No, the aesthetics are important. It's maybe not the most important reason, but it is a good, important, and valid reason that it's just better aesthetics. It stays at the top, it's orderly, it's organized, it's a formal way of doing things. That formalization is good. A lot of us language nerds call it developer ergonomics, which is a fancy way of saying it looks nice. Heck yes.
No, that, and I mean, you know, also you end up with the dynamic import and stuff, and there's just been a, yeah, just a lot of things going on in the ecosystem, because like there's the TypeScript checker compiling the TypeScript, there was Babel that used to, well, it still does it, but it just strips the types and gives you the JS, and then you have tools like ESBuild with, or like Vite, you know, that's doing similar things too. I'm not sure what ES build uses under the hood. Is it SWC? I can't remember.
It's its own thing. It competes with
Oh, it is.
SWC
Okay.
partially. They're different languages.
But
One is the former is Go, SWC is Rust, I want to
okay.
say.
Yeah,
Both
the, no,
awesome.
that's right.
Big
Yeah.
fan of both.
Yeah. There's so many ways to do things. But I've also noticed there's been, in TypeScript itself, there's been a lot of speed improvements from what I've seen. Because, like, I don't know about others, but I always had to use TS Fork when I was using Webpack before to just kind of spin off, you know, checking in another thread and stuff. And even with that, it was still, I don't know, problematic sometimes. But I guess it really depends too. When do you want to do your type checking? Because like if you're in the editor, you know, if you have all the tools enabled, like VS Code will tell you what's wrong. You don't necessarily need the watch going all the time. Like that's how I used to work. I'm curious
Yeah.
kind of how you work when you're in a TypeScript project.
Such a great question. I agree. I do not like fork TS checker or TS loader or any of those things. TS loader, especially, I'm a big fan of how it's implemented. It's a great package. If you're in a system like that needs that type of thing, great. But my personal preferred way of running TypeScript in a Webpack-y or Vite project is to just use what you described earlier of Babel or SWC or ESBuild, stripping out all the types. As you said, if your editor is already giving you IntelliSense with the little red squigglies, there's no need for your Webpack to spend a bajillion second cycles to build things. Just remove type checking from your Webpack builds altogether and then have some CI job. So, like if you send a pull request, block on failing TypeScript builds. Same with ESLint. I don't think ESLint should ever be integrated with Webpack. Run that separately and then have an editor extension that gives you ESLint complaints. There are a bajillion little utilities you could run either in Webpack or outside, but like as a developer trying to get something working locally, it should be as fast and painless as possible to get some crap on the screen. And like there's no need to block your TypeScripts, or sorry, block your Webpack builds from running on your TypeScript errors. That's so annoying. I remember I set up a project once and didn't disable that, and someone new to the ecosystem very correctly called it like the world's most annoying linter, yelling at you every time you have anything.
I always used to think, oh yeah, it makes so much sense that I have the watch of these things going on, and then it's yeah, now it's just like wasted cycles, you know? Typically what I do in a project is like some people don't like pre-commit hooks. I like pre-commit hooks, but I'll run stuff there with like lint stage and Husky, but people can bypass that, you know, with like the no verify on in Git. So typically like when I worked at Dev2, we had a ton of linting errors. It wasn't a TypeScript project, but basically just had a year long of like just keep squashing the lint errors. And then when it got to zero lint errors, that's when I added a CI check to run the lint. And it, you know, just because like at the time I was the only front end, so it's like for me it was like maintenance nightmare if they kept creeping back in. And that's kind of what we do. Like we have some TypeScript projects at Netlify, so we have the lint that goes in on CI as well as pre-commit hooks and stuff. And yeah, I find that flow a lot better. I haven't used like the watch for TypeScript, or like I haven't used a project with Webpack in a while. Typically go with what's in the editor these days. I know not everybody's using Visual Studio Code, but you know, I guess the only thing is like I don't use Vim, but I know that there's a TypeScript plugin for Vim, so I imagine you can still get all that same kind of goodness as well in there, but I don't use Vim, so I can't really say for sure,
No, you're
but
right.
yeah. Yeah.
That's one of the nice things about working in a like a mainstream popular language. Like there are a lot of people who insist that you should use Reason slash Rescript or Elm or whatever, which may be
Yeah.
legitimately great languages, but TypeScript is everywhere. Like every single popular and even most of the unpopular editors slash IDEs have a really good TypeScript plugin. Vim,
Yeah.
Emacs, everyone. Yeah. It's
Yeah,
nice.
no, exactly. We'll get to the book shortly, but like you've been working in open source for a while, and I found it really interesting that you went from what I can only assume was a great job. You were at an ed tech company, right? Was that it? The name's escaping me, but
Codecademy. It was a great job.
Codecademy.
Highly recommend Codecademy as a product and a
Yeah.
place. Lovely
Yeah.
people there.
So you were having fun there, you were enjoying it. You were still contributing to open source, but I'm curious what the decision to go full like or why did you decide to go kind of all in on working full time on open source? Because I'm sure there's a ton of people curious about this.
Lot of people who themselves are thinking about it, but it's a scary jump. It took me a while to get there. I'd say working at a company is a good thing for most people. You want to have that support of people around you, a team, a manager, a mentor, mentors plural if you can. But I really like open source software. I like doing things that benefit everyone. Like when I work on TypeScript or TypeScript ESLint, I benefit everyone who uses those tools. Like if I spend 10 hours, let's say, on some bug fixes and a feature in TypeScript, I have just saved the world's unknowable but large amounts of time. Like I've sped up the rate of human development. Like that's cool. I say these things which make myself sound so much cooler than I really am, but it makes me feel
No,
good. And when you're at a when
that's
you're at a
awesome.
company, even if you have a lot of thank you, even if you had a lot of time in your day-to-day to work on open source, it's still for the company. Like why would they hire you to do things that don't benefit them? So you don't have as much time or control over your open source stuff. And I just want to do this all the time. So I'm now one of those people, very small but hopefully growing group of people who work on open source full time. And instead of a job with health insurance and 401k and all this, I ask for money on the internet. So this is my first shameless plug of the stream. You told me I could, so I will. Please give me
Shamelessly plug
money.
away.
Yeah,
Yeah, I dropped your GitHub there so folks can check that out.
thank you. Yeah,
Yeah,
the more
no,
money
it's
people give me, the more I'm able to work on open source. That makes your life better. So thanks. But this exposes something real bad, which is that as an industry, we don't know how to make people like me work. Like the situation I've described of I work on open source tooling that benefits everyone and somehow I get money, like that's not figured out yet. We have ad hoc things like GitHub sponsors, Open Collective, before that, Patreon. But like there's no strong incentive for most companies to give to open source other than developers are yelling at finance that someone should do it and it's like vaguely good for marketing and recruiting. So I wish we had like a B Corp style, like you should do this, or we all feel bad about you and don't join, but that's not really standard yet.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting because it's like I'm working in open source at Netlify right now. I worked when I was at Dev2, I was working in open source, and that was my job. So getting paid it, like that, those are that's it's a really compelling reason why I took those jobs too. I'm a big fan of open source, and like, you know, just like you said, being able to get paid to work in open source is amazing. So like, I happen to find places that did it, but it there's like, you know, then there's kind of like three scenarios. You know, there's like somebody like me who might be working at a place that does open source, there's people that do it in their free time, and then there's people like yourself who are looking to get sponsored. And it's you're totally right, it's like how do you formalize that? Because like, you know, and it's weird too, because like large companies, you know, like Babbel, for example, which has had so many hours put into it. I know Henry Zhu gets compensated now through it's, I don't know if it's GitHub sponsors or Patreon, and I don't know if the other contributors do as well, but you know, that came out of like, I don't know if he went the same route as you, or I can't remember the story there, but you know, it's kind of amazing that like most of the planet runs on open source, like Linux and like all these like big companies, and maybe Linux people are definitely putting money into it, I guess. But like, you know, I would think all the places that have been using, you know, like Babel, Webpack, all that stuff, why aren't people or companies, you know, putting money into that? And it's, I don't know how to, I don't have an answer or anything, but it's just kind of weird. Like, 'cause like myself, I do sponsor people, but there's only so much I can do, you know? Like, I mean, I need to use money for other stuff too. And it's like, it's not like I'm about to sponsor 200 people. I definitely see the aspect where like, you know, the micro payments could definitely stack up for sure. Like if 1,000 people started paying $5 a month, you know, that's definitely changes the game. But why aren't companies like monthly, you know, just donating? I find it kind of weird is all.
Individuals donating is like yelling at people to use like either no straw or paper straws. Like, yes, you are doing a good thing, but the real issue is systemically, the capitalist society we in has not adjusted to do public goods and services and similar like open source.
Yeah,
That's my rant for the morning.
it's all good. But I do appreciate all that you're doing, because I do use ESLint and TypeScript all the time. Josh has a bit of a hard stop today, but I don't want to miss talking about your book, because this ties into everything, basically. You've been doing TypeScript for a while. You've been doing open source. I guess I'm going to grab the book in a sec, because I do have a copy. But I guess kind of speak to, I can't even fathom writing a book, honestly. So I'm curious, like, what that, how that all came about. And I'm just going to grab your book. So.
Sure, thanks. It's I also was of the opinion, oh, I couldn't write a book like that. It's that's some real stuff. Like I have to be, 50 years old with 30 years of experience and all this. But like I write blog posts, a lot of people write blogs. I think you might be familiar with Dev2, you mentioned. Like you've seen a lot of people, you yourself have a billion posts. Just keep doing that over the course of a year, and you'll have like a book level amount of stuff. I had been like talking at the occasional conference and posting on Twitter a whole bunch. Some of my posts were even useful and thought out. So O'Reilly contacted me. They said, we need a book, and this is true, I think, that it introduces TypeScript for people who don't have, say, .NET or other typed language or framework support understanding, like people who've just written JavaScript, nothing else. And I think that's a really good thing. I think every language should have a good set of introductions, book, video tutorials, online workshops, similar, that teach you it if you don't yet know, related similar tech. So that's kind of the perspective that I took for learning TypeScript. Like, what is a type system? Why do you care? How do you use it? What are all these ridiculous TypeScript errors as the first part? And then we go into TypeScript support for random other features. So yay. Thank you for getting the book. I appreciate it.
I got a hard copy, so I was in Hawaii for my offsite. Not bragging, it's just that's where I was. But
It's
I
a
was
good
reading
brand.
it on the beach. I still feel a little cautious about bringing an iPad on a sandy beach. I think I'll probably get like a Kobo or something eventually. But yeah, I want to talk about the book, because you know, as somebody that's been doing TypeScript for a while, I bought it too, because I know whenever I read something by people who know what they're talking about, I'm still gonna learn something, even though this is, I think, technically like a beginner book, getting interested in TypeScript. But I think a lot of your, I've never done anything on Codecademy, but I think your EdTech background probably helped with the approach to this book. I like how it's broken down. I like how you're saying you talk about the type system and like why we need it, what is it? And you kind of go in each section of the book, there's, I think things are explained really well with examples, but then you pause every chapter and I have it open here, but like you can go through and do some code samples and stuff to just kind of solidify what you just learned there. And I just thought that's pretty awesome. I'm not finished the book yet because I did get a little busy, but I'm about two-thirds of the way through, but I just like the way it's structured. I think one of the things I was curious about, and it's not necessarily book related, but I'm curious what you think or what you've seen that people typically struggle with TypeScript. There's the I've never used types part for sure, but I'm wondering if there's like concepts that kind of people are just like, ow, my brain, what's going on here? Or what you've kind of seen with people that you've taught or spoken to.
It's a great question. As a side note, I am realizing I should put a chapters section on the site that just explains what's in each chapter.
Oh,
But
okay.
that's a big thing. I think, well, in every language, generics is the worst. It was my least favorite chapter to write. It's just I had to rewrite it like twice or something like this, like at least once. It's just a hard concept to explain and understand for a lot of people because it's explained so poorly by so many places. Like, I don't think it's, as a concept, I don't think generics is actually that, I don't want to say difficult, but like, I don't think it's like so shockingly advanced that like most people wouldn't be able to understand it, but it is hard to explain well, which then makes it a difficult concept for a lot of people. It's just
No,
that the
it's.
terminology is hard. Like, did you know there's a difference between parameters and arguments? Like, this is something I learned writing TypeScript contents.
Yeah,
Do you remember which one is which?
I'm trying to remember, because I honestly use these interchangeably all the time before, and I think honestly, I think it's when I think I got it from when I read your book. The parameters are what you can pass in, and the argument is the value of the parameter. Is that right? I can't remember. I always
Yep,
reverse
you're
them
absolutely
around.
right.
Okay,
Yeah, parameter, that's a very good sentence. Thank you. I think you said this person's name is Nikki and M. Guilleman. The way I personally remember it is that you can give an argument. I give my spouse, my wife, arguments all the time. So, like, you give an argument to someone, and then parameters are like you describing these are my specs. In order to effectively read generics documentation, because a lot of it is so technical and jargony, it's really helpful to know the difference. But then people also use the two interchangeably. So now you have like four things like type arguments, type parameters, value parameters, the whole thing.
I would agree that generics is probably the one that kind of breaks people a bit. I'll go back to like, because you did C sharp as well. I think this is probably one of the more difficult concepts of TypeScript, but I found I eased into this well because I'd been doing generics in C sharp for a long time. It felt pretty natural, but I could 100% see this as like if this was a first time kind of what's going on here, you know? There's also the like for the type parameters, like with the generics from C sharp, they always used to use like T, U, and V, like capital. And
Oh.
it that broke so many people. Like I remember I've seen at least one blog post from Ken C. Dodd saying, please name your type parameters, like not T, you know? And it makes sense. I think it's okay maybe if it's like literally just like a lambda in there, you know, like from like C sharp. But even then, it's not explaining anything aside from saying this is a placeholder for something. I think this ties into it being inferred because before it never, I don't think it used to be inferred when generics came out. Like if you said like identity of T, R colon T here, I think you still had to specify the T in the generics initially. I'm not positive about that, but because like nowadays you don't need to because if it's a generic function like this identity, if I pass in string, sorry, if the argument is a string, then it's gonna know it's a string that it's handling. I'm not positive about that, but this is definitely the one that totally trips it up. I think the other thing with generics that I've seen with people that get thrown off by it is they'll understand, okay, I can pass in this certain thing. Say a generic function takes an array, for example. And then you're like, okay, I have my array. So like, because it's a generic array, you only get the methods of the array. But I've seen people go like, I passed in an array of like people. Why can't I access the person properties in that, you know? But it's because it's a generic array. You only get like the sort, the map or whatever. So I've seen that happen with people too, with the generics.
Yeah, I a few points here. One, I agree with you and Kenzie Dodds that you should most of the time name your generic something useful. The T, whatever, it's the same as using variable names. If you have a for loop for let I equals I less than, like, yeah, that's fine. That's a convention. But like, if you have a function that takes in three type parameters, TUV, like, what the F is that? You know, like, that's
Exactly,
meaningless.
exactly. I think it's less problematic if it's one parameter, but even then, you might as, you know, it's gonna get
Name
stripped out
it.
when it's compiling. But having said that, coming from C sharp, I was guilty of the single letter parameter names for my first few years of TypeScript.
That's okay. That's a community convention thing, and the C sharp community just needs to get its act together. Although I will say I love C sharp as a language. It's so good. Thank you, async await. Another thing I
Exactly.
want to point out, I think also that I have learned the hard way to try to frame things in terms of foundation, like how high up in the stack you need to use them. A lot of people phrase generics as advanced, like the word advanced or expert or similar to that. And then that scares a lot of folks. Like they hear this reputation online that generics are impossible, hard to learn. You have to be an expert. But really, it's that you have to be an expert to use the really advanced, fancy features of like multiple conditional mapped types put together. But having a single generic on a function is not an advanced, it's not beginner, but it's not an expert level. One of the things that I picked up on at, or learned and was taught at Codecademy working there is how to frame content in ways that are accessible to newcomers. For example, by calling things foundational versus built up or non-foundational rather than beginner and expert. By saying beginner, you're implying that other stuff is for experts, which makes people not want to do other stuff. Fun
Yeah,
fact.
I know we're not going to have a chance to talk about these because you got to go in a few minutes, but I'm going to drop the two links for the ESLint, like the AST link you sent me, and also the tour to source from Sourcegraph there. I can pop them up real quick here. I'm going to drop them in the chat, but if we come back to screen sharing for a sec.
We'll have to do another stream just to talk about it. It's such a juicy topic, though. Like, how does a language work? This is another thing. A lot of people think, in order to understand abstract syntax trees, like how do linters, tooling like TypeScript, how do they work? You have to be some genius expert with 2 decades of experience. You can learn this stuff relatively quickly after learning TypeScript for the first time. And it can be very approachable if you find, you know, good documentation, like if you don't mind me saying so, the stuff you're putting on screen that I helped make. TBD.
No, it's great. I'm gonna definitely check this stuff out. I think that'd be amazing if you're up for it. It'd probably have to be in the new year, but if we could kind of do a bit of a dive into ASTs, it obviously, because also just to kind of like, I know there's definitely some people in the chat that are familiar with ASTs, but you know, it's not just for ESLint. It's also like stuff like Prettier. You know, they all the ASTs to be able to parse the code to put the beautiful output or give the specific errors and stuff. This is definitely a topic I would be interested in because, like I was telling you before the stream, I've been a consumer of tools that use this. So, like obviously ESLint and Prettier. I've ran some code mods, like I was saying, like when React pulled out prop types. I remember it was so magical just running that code mod and it updated like 100 files and it compiled right away.
Beautiful.
And I've been in AST Explorer tinkering around, but I've never actually built anything with ASTs. And I think that would be something cool if we could maybe next time, you know, like, hey, let's make up some TypeScript ESLint rule. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a real one, but just to kind of go through the process, I think that'd be super interesting. And also just from, like I said, from a selfish point of view, it'd be good for me to just dive into it.
Awesome. I'm very down.
I just wanted, before we go, I'm going to drop a link again to your book and to your link. So your GitHub and your Twitter, definitely give Josh a follow on Twitter if you can and you want to sponsor him. And yeah, just thanks for all the work you've been doing in the TypeScript space. Before we wrap things up, anything you want to say before you head out?
First of all, thank you for letting me go on. And again, apologies for the hard stop in a couple
Oh, it's
minutes.
all good. It's all good.
This has been fun. Thank you for listening to me. Definitely let me know, reach out to me if there are any like features or things you want me to work on in the TypeScript ESLint area. Early on, I was mentioning the chat performance. That's something I'm going to be looking at later this year, trying to get TypeScript ESLint as speedy as we all think it should be. Also, please again sponsor me on GitHub and/or sponsor the TypeScript ESLint project. We actively work to make the TypeScript dev experience better, and we have so little money, it's really hard to get things done. Fun fact actually about TypeScript ESLint, our parser, the thing that parses TypeScript syntax, is used by Prettier. So we actually have more download.
Oh,
Big fans of
we got.
Prettier.
I know you got to go, but John Riley popped in the chat. So, hey, John, thanks for all you've been doing in the community too. Cool. All right. Well, have a good day. I know you got to get to your thing, so I'll let you run out of that WeWork. And next week, folks, I'm going to be hanging out with Zach Leatherman talking about WebC and all the 11D goodness. So thanks again, Josh, and we'll see you all
Awesome.
next week.
Bye.
Bye.